you with, knew what you were talking about.
Right.
Morning, sir.
Morning.
Morning, sir. How are you?
However, you've got heat.
Okay, good, good. It's the heat of the heat of the physical heat and the heat of the Torah. Okay, let's see where we're up to here. We're definitely on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. I think we make some progress here on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. We had here a drasha of Rav Shimon Pazi. That was, I think, the last thing we spoke about. And in Divrei Hayomim, he's got a posuk,
yes,
which he claims that the names that are listed here refer to one person. So let's go over that, and then we'll move forward. So this will be the last of the skinny lines, of the thin lines on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Rav Shimon Pazi ki avi posach b'divrei hayomim, when he darshan divrei hayomim, omar hachi, kol dvarecha echad hein, v'anu yardim l'darshan. So all the names that are mentioned in the book of divrei hayomim, they're all referring to one person who has many, many different names. And this might connect to the previous sugya that we learned about the names of Mordechai. Remember, Ben Kish, Ishivini, that each one is another name of Mordechai and reflects on the fact that he has a power of tefillah. Okay, now we read the pasuk in Divrei Hayomim that he's going to darsh. So it says, V'ishto ha-Yehudiya yolda es yered, etc. So before we read the whole pasuk, first, the first thing that Rav Shimon ben Pazi is going to do for us is he's going to focus on this phrase, Ishto ha-Yehudiya. And according to Rav Shimon ben Pazi, that phrase is a reference to Bisya Bas Paro, because her name appears at the end of this pasuk. So the beginning of this pasuk is going to tell us about the mother of Yered, etc., etc., with all those names. And she is called, this mother is called Ishto HaYehudiyah. So I'm just going to fast forward for a second, then we'll go back and read the pasuk. My mind, Kari Le Yehudiyah, Kari Le Yehudiyah, why is she called Yehudiyah? And the truth is that if you identify her as Bas Paro, then she's not a Yehudiya at all. So this is very paradoxical that you're telling me Ishto HaYehudiya, this Jewish woman, is the daughter of Paro. Well, what makes a Jewish woman? Bamai Kari Le Yehudiya, Al Shum Shekofra Vavodah Zara. This is the first interpretation, that she's called a Yehudiya because, if you recall, in the previous Gemara, we were wondering about the lineage of Mordechai. On the one hand, it says Ishimini, which implies that he came from Shevet Binyamin. On the other hand, he's called Ish Yehudi. So is he from Shevet Yehud or not? So the Gemara says that the word Yehudi, that description is a reference to the fact that a Jew denies Avodah Zarah. And that's what Mordechai did. He denied Avodah Zarah. He refused to bow down to this Getchka that Haman wanted him to bow down to. And here too, with regard to Bisya Bas Paro, she's called a Yehudiya because she has that quality of denying Avodah Zarah. And she rejected the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim, Dichsiv, and now the Gemara takes it to another level. Not only did she deny Avodah Zarah, but Vatered Bas Paro Lirchos Al Hayar, Amram Yochanan Sheyarda Lirchots Migilule Beis Aviha. So Rashi interprets that. What does it mean that she went down to the Yaar in order to wash away the disgusting, repulsive Avodah Zarah, the Tinuf, what's called the Avodah Zarah? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, Rashi says that it was a Tvila L'Shem Gerus. So the reason why the pasuk in Divrei Yom calls her Yehudiya is because she was actually a Gioris. She converted to Judaism. Now, again, I mentioned to you last week that conversion at that point in history is a very complicated concept, because there was no Matan Torah yet. So what exactly does conversion mean? So I'm just going to say a sentence here that I don't expect anyone to understand, because I don't know if I understand it. So we'll just say it for the records. And that is that the Nesivus claims that even before Matan Torah, there was Geiris for Mishpachas Yisrael, but not Kedushas Yisrael. Okay,
Avram
had an idea, and he ran with it. So people were like, he had followers.
So he was Megayer Sandor.
So what did they do? They know Matan Torah. So we know you came to his house. You washed your feet. Right. So washing yourself was like the. What can you do? So one is in mind. Physically, what do you do? So they have to wash it.
So the Nesivus claims that the Mila of Avraham Avinu was a Mila's Gerus, but it was only a Gerus L'shem Mishpachas Yisrael. So it means, for example, we usually have a principle of Ger Kodeshin, Ger Shinskak Kodeshin Olnomi, which means technically he can marry any of his biological relatives. That doesn't apply at the Gerus of Matan Torah. Why? Because they were already Gerim even before Matan Torah, as far as Mishpachas is concerned. As I said before, that's a long, complicated discussion. Dimensions of Gerus. One dimension of Gerus predates Matan Torah. Now let's go back to the pasuk. So now this pasuk is describing Bisya Bas Paro as the mother of, it says Yolda es Yered Avi Gidar, and it turns out that Avi Gidar is also a name unto itself. Ves Chever Avi Socho Ves Yikusil Avi Zanoach V'Elu Bnei Bisya Bas Paro Asher Lokach Merit. So she was married to someone by the name Mary. So he says the following, Yolda, what's going on over here? Because, as we'll see, Rav Shim Ber Pazi understands that this fellow by the name of Yered is none other than Moshe Rabbeinu. So the question is, Vaha Rabuye Rabise, it could be that she was in charge of raising Moshe Rabbeinu, but she didn't give birth to Moshe Rabbeinu. So how could the pasuk say Asher Yolda? And the answer is Lomel Choshekal Avagadol Yosav Yisom Sofbeis Omar Lo Vakosuki Yolda. That if you raise someone, that's also considered parenting. Okay, then Shavuot Tov. So now we have another explanation, a further embellishment of Rav Shim Bar Pazi of all these names that are mentioned here as Yered, Avigdor, Veschever, Avisoko, etc., etc. Yered and Moshe, V'lam Nikra Shmo Yered, Sheyared Lahem LiYisrael Man B'Yomav. In other words, it was in his chus that the man came down. And this is based on a Gemara Tainis that says Yared Lahem Aman B'Schus Moshe. Right, the gifts that we received from Hashem during the Midbar were B'schus Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. So the man was B'schus Moshe.
Can I ask a question actually about the statement just before this, about anyone who raises Yosem? He wasn't a Yosem, though. He had parents.
He was a Yosem.
Well, what defines
Yosem is who's taking care of him.
I think the Gemara is deriving from this parsha Asher Yolda that if you raise someone, you call the parent, and then the Gemara expands it to say that if you raise a Yosem Yisova, then you're considered like a parent. Meaning, I don't think the Gemara is referring specifically to Moshe.
Just saying to raise him. So if you raise an orphan, then
correct. Lomar lecha. So the words lomar lecha, we can extrapolate and expand this to a person who raises a child.
I think it goes further than that. I think that halachically, I think that there are cases where people, if there is somebody that's
child,
or not to know, but even somebody that has. Whatever, gives up a child, whatever it is, and somebody else takes the other child, whatever the case may be, divorce, whatever it is, there's somebody else that's raising that child. has that shame as a parent. Even the, I think that is a sufficient shilas in terms of calling up to the Torah and things like that. That you may be, you may be able to use the father's name to call up the Torah.
I know there's one tshuva that says that you could be perhaps become the mitzvah period of a rivi by raising someone else.
It's more than just. It doesn't necessarily have to be that they're actually quote unquote yosom. I think.
Okay then, so Yorad Lehem Yisrael Man the Yomav of Skuso, and then we get another name of Moshe, and that's Gedor.
I'm sorry, but that also just raises a question, which is probably beyond this discussion here. But that if somebody has children but doesn't raise them, let's say,
So then his parents are solely biological.
Did they fulfill the mitzvah of Pirivu or not?
Right. So you have to know. I mean, that's not an easy question.
A whole bunch of,
Gidar. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu called Gidar? Shegadar Pirtzoseihem Shel Yisrael. Now there are two ways of learning this Gemara. Of Gadar Pirtzoseihem Shel Yisrael. The simple way of learning it is that Moshe Rabbeinu is the giver of the Torah. He's the transmitter of the Torah. And that is going to close up any religious gaps, so to speak, the protzos that are open. The other way is to saying it that when the Jewish people sinned, for example, let's take the case of the Egel Azov, so that's called a piritza. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu could punish them and even destroy them. So Moshe Rabbeinu closes up that piritza by praying on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Then the pasuk calls him a chever. Why is he called a chever? And the answer is shechiber es Yisrael aviem shebashamayim. He becomes the conduit, so to speak, to receive the Torah and transmit it to Klal Yisrael. That's the chibur that connects our Father in heaven to Klal Yisrael. Then he's called Soko. And this reminds us a little bit of Sari Menu, who is also called Yiskar, you remember? So it says, Socho Shednaso Lehem Yisrael Kisuka. Sukkah is considered in the language of Tanakh a Mogain, a Magina al Ha'adam. In other words, it protects a person when he's out in the wilderness. And Moshe Rabbeinu was like a protector of Klal Yisrael, because again, at every period, at every possible time, Moshe Rabbeinu gets up and he defends Klal Yisrael in front of the Ribbono Shel, and with his supplications, he's able to save the people of Israel. So that concept of sukkah, that's why we say Ufros Oleinu Sukkah Shlomecha, and then the bracha ends Shomer Esam Yisrael La'ad. So whenever you see the word sukkah, you'll always see the word shmira, because the purpose of a sukkah is to protect. Then the pasuk calls him Yekusiel. And why? What is the meaning of the name Yekusiel? So he takes apart the name and he focuses on the Kuf and the Vav, Shekivu Yisrael Lekel Biyomav. In other words, on a daily basis, the people of Israel depended and looked towards the Man, and also the Slav, and also the Be'er, all these things during the 40 years in the Midbar that would sustain them. And this is all considered part of the schus of Moshe Rabbeinu, that during his period of time, the people of Israel felt a total sense of dependence upon the Ribbono Shel Olam. Another name that's given to Moshe Rabbeinu here in Divrei Hayomim is Zanoach. What does it mean, Zanoach? Zanoach usually means to ignore something or forsake something. That's a strange kind of name for Moshe Rabbeinu. So he says the following, Shehizniach Avonoseim Shel Yisrael, meaning as a result of his tefillah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ignored the sins of Israel and decided, instead of destroying, to sustain the people of Israel and allow them to continue to exist. Now in this pasuk, it's very strange, but every time the name is mentioned, it's prefixed by the word Avi. So you'll have Avi Gidar, and then you'll have Avi Socho, and then Avi Yekusiel. Why the repetition of the word Avi over and over and over again? So the Gemara says that this is indicative of a threefold greatness in the attributes of Moshe Rabbeinu. He's great in Torah, he's great in Chochmah, he's great in Nevius. Av B'Torah means that he is the father of Torah. Whatever Torah we learn, it's called Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the Av B'Chachma, means that he's the leader of wisdom. Wisdom in the sense that he can guide the people, and he's the elder statesman, so to speak, that we look up to for determining how we should live. And the people of Israel are sort of young and immature, and therefore they very often rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu, and that rebellion is kind of reflective of the younger generation. I know of a shul where I spent actually 2 years of my time, and now the younger people just simply rebelled. I don't know if I told you the story, so they're now davening in some other place in that neighborhood. It's really a sad story. And the whole shul is like frozen in its tracks. And then he's the Av B'Nevius. And Moshe Rabbeinu is always described, the Rambam says it over and over again through his writings, that Moshe is the Av HaNevius. And that's probably indicative of the fact that Moshe is the trailblazer for Nevius, for Nevuah. And in fact, the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu is unique, not just quantitatively, but qualitatively. And the Rambam goes out of his way to describe and define the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu as unique in four different ways. And the upshot of all those four ways is Ponim El Ponim Dibur Hashem, that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to God like a friend speaks to his friend. There was no physical weakness, there was not at night, there was not a dream, he got it directly from Hashem, he could initiate it. All those differences make Moshe Rabbeinu the Av HaNevi'im. I want to just add a footnote here. He says that the word Hizniach is a reflection of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded to Klal Yisrael, and specifically to the prayers of Moshe on behalf of Klal Yisrael in the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel. The pasuk says, "Ubiyom pakdi, upakadati aleihem chatosam," which means that there was no bittul. It was not as if the avera was completely gone as a result of God's accepting the prayers of Moshe Rabbeinu. It was only a temporary blockage in the sense that God says, I will remember the sin later on in history. So that's called mazniach. So the difference here is between the word mazniach and mevatel. Mazniach indicates just a temporary postponement of punishment, but the sin is still very much alive and well. And when God remembers to bring about punishment for sins, he'll add a little bit of extra punishment for the Chet HaEgel, because we never got a full Teshuva and Kapara for the Chet HaEgel. That's called Mazniach. But on the other hand, Hashem declares, Vayomer Hashem Solachti Kidvarecha, and Solachti Kidvarecha at least is a temporary slicho, a stopgap measure which allows the people of Israel to continue to exist.
The punishment, will we suffer the punishment? I mean,
everything throughout generations. Every punishment you think that looks like a punishment, right, to Israel, there's a little bit of Chet HaEgel in the mix.
Because I guess I wonder, because when we talk about the attributes of Hashem, we talk about the punishment only to the third and fourth generations. Why is this then?
Right, there's another concept called Ochzin V'maisa Moseha, meaning that if we haven't learned from the mistakes of our forefathers, then there's a little bit of an extra punishment. And that's a metaphysical concept which you have to understand. You understand? It's not for us as we try to get to the end of this paragraph.
No.
So we can get back to... Yeah. So now the name Avigdor, remember the name Gedor, which with the Avi becomes Vigdor, and that means he's the Av B'Torah. And again, in our first understanding of the previous Gemara that said that Gadar Pertzosem Shal Yisrael means the Torah itself is going to protect us against the Avodas, against the Yetzirah and so forth and so on. So that's called the Protzos. The Protzos are the Pertzos, are the cracks that the Avodas, that the Yetzirah wants to put in our religiosity, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu is called the Gedor. Gedor means he's the Av B'Torah, and through that Torah we're able to fill in these cracks, so to speak, to strengthen ourselves against the powers of the Yetzirah. Also keep in mind that there's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim which Chazal say referred to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's called Ir Giborim Ola Chacham, and that is, they identify that with Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the Av Socho, which socha means chachma. In other words, he knew the chachma, and the chachma here was gave Moshe Rabbeinu the ability to know how to pray to the Ribono Shel Olam and protect Klal Yisrael from tzaros. So the idea of chachma is also related to tefillah. One last point before we go on, and this is an important point. The Marsha writes that there's a paradox here, because Moshe Rabbeinu is called the Av HaNevi'im. Now, in describing Moshe as such, it also implies that Moshe Rabbeinu understands the implication of sin. There's a very famous statement, which he quotes here in the name of the Psikta. I know it in the name of the Yushalmi, but whatever it is, Shalul l'Nevua chote ma oncho. They asked Nevua, what's the punishment for a sinner? Amro lahem hanefesh achotas hi tomos. That there's no recourse. A person forfeits his right to exist by sinning against God. So a sin is considered rebellion, and that gives us no right to continue to exist. In the next part, which he doesn't quote here, they asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu what was Chote Ma'on, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's answer was Yase Tshuva V'Yiskaper. But Nevuah itself, in that famous Chazal, takes a very harsh position on the implications of sin, and the now Moshe Rabbeinu is called the Avi Zanuach. So on the one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu is called the Avi HaNevuah, and on the other hand, he's called the Redeemer of Israel, or the Protector of Israel. So the Marsha says that Adaram, that who I did, you know, Mokum Shabasa, even though he was the Av of the Nevi'im, and he was probably the one who said Nefesh Chaltasi Tomus, he recognized the difficult situation of Klal Yisrael because of their sin, right, we called an Am Kshei Orev, that he understood and he perceived. But at the same time, he refused to give up hope, and his Niach Avonoseim Shal Yisrael B'Tfilaso, he caused HaKadosh Baruch Hu his Tfilah to protect Klal Yisrael and to ignore, so to speak, or postpone punishment for their sins. So there's a sort of a paradox here in calling Moshe Rabbeinu the Av HaNevi'im and at the same time calling him Zanuach, that name Zanuach, which applies to Moshe Rabbeinu because Zanuach, because he's Niach Avonoseim Shal Yisrael B'Tfilaso, is that Moshe Rabbeinu understood that despite the fact that according to strict justice, HaNefesh HaKotasi Tomus, nevertheless there's still room for divine compassion through the power of tefillah.
The Talmud Dvora talks about this idea that there's mitzvot, you know, schuyot that you have, and then you have chisronot, the chateim, right? So you think, well, if I've got a million mitzvot and I have like 50 things, so this would cancel out. So he says, no, don't look at it that way.
Ain chet mevatel mitzvah. Ain mitzvah mevatel chet.
You still have to get it.
Right? Yeah. He says, you've got chetayim. So what he's doing, what Moshe is doing here, and what we daven for on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, is that God should... The sins are there. We know they're there. Okay? We're asking for forgiveness. And B, we're asking, ignore them. It's not, let them, like, they're sitting at God's feet and he sees them and he knows they're there. But you've got, so don't cancel it. You've got a million or whatever number of mitzvot. Run with that. Right. And these, let's lessen it. Let's,
right.
Let's just.
And it's also Chabad Tzadik. He seeks the kindness, so also that phrase also.
Well, I see you're all begiving the Torah. I'm very impressed.
We've heard a lot of good shiurim.
When I was your age, I didn't open up Torah. You know, I was lucky if I opened up the Silas Yisharim. That's as far as I
can. Rabbi, this is just not a shiur. This is like chabura. We're all in that. You're not alone.
V'ele b'nei bisya asher lakach morod. And the question is, who married Bisya? And this is interesting because the Gemara says that there's a stira a contradiction, an apparent contradiction, because this pasuk indicates that Bisya was married to someone by the name of Morad. So the Gemara asks, "Vechi Mered or Morad Shmo? Was that really her husband's name? Valo Kalev Shmo?" And the pasuk in Divrei Hayomim indicates that Kalev married Bisya. So the Gemara answers, "Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Yovo Kalev Shemorad Batsas Meraglim." The Yisa es bas paro shemorda begilule base of viha. I'm just going to give you what I think. Again, you'll tell me what you think. You know, the word mered, which translates into English as rebellion, is usually a pejorative term. You know, we associate with rebellion some negative attributes. But there's a good side to every midah. And in the case of mered, a person who's able to withstand and reject the general population and the mores of a negative or immoral or unethical society, he's called a morid, and his merit is of course a very positive one. And the Gemara now is isolating, is singling out two people who went against the stream. You know, they say about the salmon, it goes up against the stream. And they made a pair. They fit to each other. That was Kalev, and that was Bisya Bas Paro, because Bisya rejected and rebelled against the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim, where she was brought up, and Kalev rejected the influence of the other Meraglim, which was a very powerful influence. So much so that Moshe Rabbeinu, according to Chazal, changed the name of Yoshua because he knew what an impact the Atzas Meraglim could have. So there are two mardim, so to speak, here, but in the positive sense, that rejected the influence of society. They were able to overcome that influence. Well, now we get back to the Megillah. Ish Yehudi Ayav Shushana Biro Shmo Mordechai Asher Haglom Yerushalayim Im Hagola Asher Haglosa. And the Gemara is going to make a diuk here on the language of the pasuk. It says Asher Hegla Yerushalayim. It should have said Asher Gola Yerushalayim. Omar Rava. So Rava makes a statement on this Asher Hegla that it means Shegola Miatzmo. So in Digduk, there's something called reflexive, and it means that you can do an action towards yourself, and that's called Hegla. And Moshe and Mordechai himself decided to go into Golus. What it means is the following: that when the people of Israel were sent into Golus, Mordechai had to make a decision. He could either decide to remain and remain behind, or he could go into the Golus itself together with Klal Yisrael. So Rava wants to say that it was his own decision not to leave Klal Yisrael alone, but rather to go with them to the Golus, and that would give him an opportunity to have an impact on the people of Israel in Golus. Where there's a similar idea with regard to Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. You remember the day he remained in the east bank of Jordan. And it says in Chazal that there were many people in Shevet Menashe that remained behind because they would have a positive influence on Reuven and Gad.
Right. Moshe realized that these people are going to forget the whole concept of Eretz Yisrael, so he put Ben Asher in there because they were the ones who loved Eretz Yisrael.
And now we say the following: Vayehi Omenes Hadasa, he Esther Bas Dodo. So there are two names that are given to the same woman: Korile Hadasa and Korile Esther. So the Tanoim and Machlokas now, which is the real name of this woman, and which is a kinui, some sort of an acronym? Tanya Rabbi Meir Omer Esther Shma, her real name was Esther. Veloma Nikre Shma Hadasa. In other words, Hadasa is sort of an add-on name to describe something about her greatness, her saintliness. To be Meshabech or Hashem HaTzadikim Shenikroim Hadasim. Tzaddikim are always identified with Hadassim. This you'll find in the famous Chazal about the Dalad Minin, that the hadasim represent maisim tovim, you know, something that has a good odor and has a good influence on others. He writes in the footnote, Hatam she tzadikim nikroim hadasim, mishum sha'odom nimshal li'etz ha'sode, man is compared to a tree, harosha nimshal li'ish ha'ilan srak, an evildoer is called an ilan srak, means a tree that has no tam v'reach, v'hatzadik nimshal li'tomor, right? Tzadik ha'tomor yifrom. And a tomor is a date tree, she'esh lo peros tovim, and also a tzaddik is nimshal hadas shenosein reach tov, which I think refers to the influence of a tzaddik on others. Are you familiar at all with the phrase, it's a Yiddish phrase, a tzaddik in pelts? Does anybody know what the word pelts mean? It's not the name of a place.
It's a fur.
Exactly, a big coat. So they give the marshal of the landlord who comes to visit his complaining tenant. His tenant is freezing cold. And the landlord comes in, he sits down, and says, what's the problem? I don't feel cold, because he's wearing a big coat that keeps him warm. You know, he's not willing to give heat. You know. So now we have a description of Esther's hadasa, because she has this quality of tzidkus like a hadas. V'cheinu omer, we find the pasuk in Sefer Zechariah, it says, V'hu omeid bein hadasin. And the kavana is that the Shechina went into Bavel together with Klal Yisrael and hovered amongst the tzaddikim which were in the golus of Bavel. And that's called, amongst the tzaddikim, is called amongst the hadasin. Because the hadasim represent symbolically represent the tzaddikim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer hadasim shma, just the opposite. The pasuk says, "Vayhi Omer es hadasa." So her name was Hadasa. For lama nikre shma Esther. So the additional name was Esther, which is given by the Megillah. Al shem shahoisa masteres dvoreha. Right. This is going to be the introduction to the entire sugya that we're going to learn now, about all the pressure that was placed on Esther to reveal her nation, and she always resisted that pressure. Shenemar ein Esther mageres es ama, therefore she's called Esther. Now, I'm not exactly sure why the Gemara here deviates a little bit from the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin asked the question about the name Esther. Do you remember the Gemara's answer? It's very famous. I think we've mentioned it in the past. Al-Shem HaPosuk Haster Aster Esponim.
Right.
But I guess what the Gemara is trying to avoid here is a description of Esther which would indicate sadness, or, you know, the absence of, you know, God's revelation, the Hester Ponim. The Gemara wants to assume, especially according to Rabbi Yehuda, saying that Esther was an add-on, that it must be a shevach, it must be a praise to her greatness. We, on the other hand, have a right to derive other conclusions from the name Esther. Rav Nechemya Omer Hadasa Shma, he goes back to support Rabbi Yehuda's position. The Lama Nikra Esi has a different variant explanation for the name Esther. Shahayu Umos Ha'olam, that the people of the world, they praised her beauty, and Korin Osal Shum Istahar. When we refer to the beauty of the moon, like for example you see a beautiful full moon, it's called in Hebrew the Areach, and in Lashon Aramit it's called Istahar. Istahar means the beauty of the moon. And she was beautiful in the eyes of everyone, which we're going to see is a very strange concept, according to at least Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, who claims that she really wasn't beautiful at all. But yet everybody found her beautiful. So obviously we're talking about some sort of inner quality. Ben Azay Omer, Esther, why did the Pasuk call her Hadasa when her name was Esther? So he goes back to the sheet of Rabbi Meir that we started with. And the answer is Shalo Aruka Velo Ktsara Hoisa Ela Benonis Kehadasa. So this is referring to the harmonious beauty of Esther, that she's like the Hadassah. The Hadassah is considered the most beautiful of the growths, because it's very balanced. You know, you have the perfect three layers every time going up, the Meshulash, what we call. And she also was very beautiful. Now, honestly, don't ask me any questions here, because I don't understand what Ben Azai is saying over here. You know, it's one thing to say that she had an inner quality of beauty, but this statement of Ben Azai, honestly, and he was a single fellow, he was an old bachelor. Right? I don't know exactly why he has to get into the physical beauty. There's got to be some deeper meaning here. I looked in the footnote, and he says, this is reminiscent of a Gemara in Zvachim, I think, about a Balmum, a Kohen Balmum, if some of his features are, you know, the body parts are out of
sync.
Does he have something? It actually refers to, it's the Marashat saying this, that Shmuel Aleph, Chana prayed for a child who would be Zera Anashim, which the Gemara in Brachos
identifies
as a normal child, and so one of the normal characteristics that the Gemara cites is that he's not too tall or too short, and so therefore being average height is a positive.
Right. No, I didn't mean to ask that question, Eric. I was asking a different question. I'm saying it just seems to me that, again, only on a superficial level, I'm sure there are deeper meanings here, that Ben Azai is addressing physical qualities. Again, the fact that he says that you're physically well-balanced is very positive. That's wonderful, and I don't deny that. But I'm just wondering what that means. Like, for example, again, I don't know what the Torah Dvorah has to say about this, but I'm sure there's something in the Torah Dvorah about this. Why is it that the Torah always focuses on the beauty of, you talk about the beauty of Rachel, the beauty of Sarah, you know, Ashes, you know, you talk about Isha Yefas Toar, the Torah itself talks about the beauty of Yosef.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'll look in the Sfarim, and I promise you, I haven't looked in the Sfarim, but I'll take a shrewd advice here, that they'll all speak about the inner beauty of a person that goes beyond the physicality. And in this case of Ben Azai, I'm a little bit at loss here. You know, if you talk about the fact that everyone saw her as beautiful, that was Rav Nechemia, am I right?
Rav Nechemia said the same thing. So.
But that's, I think, a little different, because we're going to soon see that, at least in terms of her dermatological skin color, she wasn't exactly attractive. But yet everyone found her beautiful, like the Gemara says in Sanhedrin about the Mashiach, right? Everyone's going to relate to the Mashiach. Oh, he's me, so to speak. You know,
But I think that that's exactly the point, because she is somebody that you know, again, they had to find somebody that he felt was going to be the whatever. Achashverosh was looking for somebody. Everybody's finding this one person that kind of relates to everybody.
Right. So that's Rav Nechemia. And again, I honestly believe that Rav Nechemia is referring to an inner beauty, some charm. The Gemara will soon see is going to apply a very famous pasuk of Chutzal Chesed Nimshach Aleh to Esther. Right. You know, what does it mean, Chutzal Chesed? Certain charm, a certain grace, a certain inner beauty.
The word is.
But when I get to Ben Azai, Ben Azai talks about the fact that her physical body was well composed. Yeah. You know, there were no parts of her body that we call a balmud. You know, where she had long legs, or
well, I mean, you could say that that's the grace of God. In other words, the physical appearance, just like somebody who's wealthy, but, you know, somebody who's like when it talks about who you're going, you know, who Moshe should assign as officers over Bnei Israel, and somebody, you know, one of the characteristics is somebody's wealthy. Now, there's a reason for that, but it's also, you know, wealth is a reward from Hashem in a way.
So okay, maybe that's what Ben Azai has in
mind. From Hashem,
the Hebrew word is.
I suspect there's a lot more here than meets the eye. Anyway, let's go on. So, Yeshua Ben Kochomer, Esther. What did Esther actually look like? Yerokrokes, Hoysa. She had the color of a hadas. She was green in color. I remember when I was younger, they were producing, and it lasted only for a month or so, green ketchup. Do you remember this?
Yes.
I think Heinz or one of those companies, green ketchup.
No, it didn't last.
It didn't go over well, you know.
No, but I think...
In Canada, everything has to be green, you know. I know really that was...
No, but I think there's a concept of olive skin.
Yes. There's an olive... The Mediterranean complexion is an olive complexion.
Yeah.
So it's a... There's somewhat of a greenish hue to the darker skin.
Anyway, I'll just point out here that Rashi and all the Mefarshim say the following: the Afal Pichen Hoysanires Yafel Umos. You hear the Afal Pichen. So Rabbi Shimon ben Levi doesn't mean that she had a certain attractive greenness to her. And he says that the fact that Achashverosh as well found her so beautiful is all Shalo Kederach Hatem. Could you imagine a woman who's not attractive and anyone finds her attractive? I mean, that's got to be supernatural. And then he applies the famous statement of Chutzal Chesed Moshuch Aleha. And Rashi borrows this, not here, but in Masechta Ksuvos, to the famous statement of Basileo, that when we dance in front of the Kala, we say Kala Norma Chasuda. Yeah. And Rashi quotes this Gemara here, Chutzal Chesed Moshuch Aleha. There's another Gemara, by the way, I forget exactly where in Brachas it is, and the Gemara says it's somebody who learns Torah at night, you know, there's a special quality or special skula inherent in Torah study, and that is Chutzal Chesed Moshech Aleha Bayom, that somehow there's some sort of a grace that carries over. So when we talk about a beautiful woman, whether it's the Kala in the case of Kala Nova Chasudin, in this case of Esther, we're talking about some sort of an inner chen or an inner grace, which is called Chutzal Chesed, and that's a divine quality. He writes in the footnote, he says, Madua Hotzi Rabbi Shuman Karkas HaKosu Mipshuto. The Pasuk says that Esther was Yifas Tor, Yifas Mare. So why did Rabbi Shuman Karka feel compelled to explain that she wasn't really good looking? And he says the following. This is based on another statement of Rabbi Shuvan Karcho in Masechta Bava Basra. Shesover sheiyov hoya bimei Achashverosh. Right, there are five different opinions as to whether, at what period of time in history Iyov lived, if he lived at all. Okay, so according to Rabbi Shuvan Karcho, he lived at the time of Achashverosh. He derives from a pasuk in Iyov that says, "V'lo nimtza noshim yofos bibnos Iyov b'chol ha'aretz ezun darsh and isbakshu bo noshim yofos." In other words, the Torah describes the children of Iyov, the daughters of Iyov, as being so beautiful that they looked throughout the entire world and they couldn't find anyone as beautiful as the daughters of Iyov. And what generation was that? Says Rabbi Shuv ben Karcha, Havi Omer said Dorah Shal Achashverosh, when they were looking for the most beautiful woman in the provinces. L'cheno Yekoshel Rabbi Shuv ben Karcha, Kevan Shek Shebikshu Avdei Achashverosh Noshim Yofos, Bevadai Motsu Es Benos Iyov. So it's very strange, because the Pasuk in Iyov seems to indicate that despite the fact that they looked through the entire generation, they couldn't find anyone as beautiful as Benos Iyov. So if that was public knowledge, why didn't the Avdei Achashverosh come up with the Benos Iyov? Instead they came up with Esther. So therefore, Bavadai, it must be that there were women who were beautiful, and therefore the question is, so why did Achashverosh choose Esther? She wasn't from the Benos Iyov. Therefore he says that it was some inner quality, and I'm adding that, Shahayachut Shal Chesed Moshechaleh, that despite the fact that she looked like a Hadas, so next time you call your wife a Hadas, you know, that's not a very complimentary description, at least according to this presentation. And the answer is that Chut Shal Chesed Moshechaleh, in other words, I find you beautiful. You know, Beit Shammai says that you're not supposed to say about a woman who's not beautiful, Kaladama Chasuda, right? Because Midvar Sheker Tircha. So amongst the various explanations of Beis Ilshi, to some say that the Chassan finds her beautiful. He saw the inequalities of her beauty.
Right.
And I see this all the time. I see people who think their wives are the most beautiful women in the world. That's the way it should be. And, you know, I don't know if they're Miss Universe necessarily.
So this actually interestingly cites the Vilna Gaon saying that, who apparently, according to this, explained that actually cited by the Beis Yosef that Esther was beautiful, but as a result of the pain she experienced of being taken by Ahasuerus, she developed a greenish complexion. But even so, she looked beautiful to everyone because Hashem endowed her with...
So she was born beautiful and became green. Is right. That what you said? Okay. Ki ein lo av va'ein. Oh, this is a very important piece of Gemara. Right.
So what does that
ki
mean?
Ki ein lo av va'ein. Okay. Question is whether we should... All right, we'll give it a start here, but I want to come back to some very, very important Rashis on this Gemara of Ki Ein Lo Av Va'en. There's a repetition in the Pasuk, which the Gemara is trying to figure out. Because in the next part of the Pasuk, after telling us that Esther was a Yesoma, it says, Uvemos Avia Ve'ima, and then it says, Lekacha Mordechai Lo Levas. We're going to have machlokas what levas means, but before we get to that, why did the Megillah have to repeat the words uvemos avi ima? It just said in the previous part of the pasuk, ein la av ha'en. She had no father or a mother. So the Gemara says lomeli. Why did the Megillah have to repeat itself? Amar Rav Acha says that the Megillah wants to teach us that she was born without parents. What does that mean, she was born without parents? Ibarta, after she became pregnant, Mes Avia. So while she was a fetus, her father died. Yeladita, Mesa Ima. And her mother died during childbirth. So technically speaking, she had no father nor a mother. So I'll just mention very quickly here a gevaldige chiddush here in Rashi, which the post can make a big, big deal about. Usually when we learn an Agadita, we think it has no bearing on halacha, but this Rashi might have tremendous bearing on halacha in contemporary life. Because Rashi says that ubi'aladidata imam mesa v'lo nireis likros em, that her mother did not survive the birth process to be called a mother. Now, what is the halachic significance of this? There are two opinions as to how to define a mother in halacha. One opinion is that it all depends on the ovum itself. The woman whose ovum it is the mother of the child. Another opinion says no, it's the woman who gives birth to the child. That's the mother of the child. Rashi seems to assume that when it says ein la em, that she doesn't have a mother, it means lo nireis likros em. You can't call her a mother because she never actually saw the baby, meaning she died at the moment of birth, and a mother becomes a mother right after birth. And the poskim wanted to derive from this that motherhood, according to halacha, is defined by birth. And the birth mother is the mother. This is a tremendous, tremendous controversy in modern poskim. And this is called surrogate motherhood, as you all know. So the question is, if Leah was the genetic mother, but Rachel was the birth mother, who is the real mother of the child? Which has tremendous, tremendous implications, not only for whether or not we go through this process of surrogate mother, but in terms of Erevah, in terms of Yerusha, and a host of different nafkaminas. And the post want to be medayik from this Gemara that says that Esther was born without a mother. What do you mean she was born without a mother? She had a mother. But the answer is this was not the mother of Leda, because at the time of Leda, the mother died. So let's assume, for example, again, I don't know exactly at what moment in time Esther pops her head out, but let's assume that her mother was already gone when she popped her head out, if you follow what I'm saying. So at the time of halachic Leda, she didn't have a mother. And Rashi makes a big deal about it, that you can't call her a mother. Eino niris likros em. Why? Because she didn't live to Leda. So that would mean, Rabosai, that according to this, the surrogate mother is the mother, halachically, of the child. Mm-hmm. And many poskim reject that approach. And they bring other proofs in the opposite direction. I gave a whole shiur on this once in the OU Center, if you're familiar with it. Wow. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. I wish everyone a great day. And Moshe will be with us tomorrow, and then we're going to have a bon voyage.